Lutheran Public Radio is now a nonprofit organization. That means all past, present, and future gifts to LPR are tax deductible. Please consider making a gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate by check, make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio, and mail it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also make a tax-deductible gift online, issuesetc.org. Thanks for your support. Well, it's going to happen this week. A couple days from now, 200 years. That's how old he would be had he lived. Of course, he didn't. It's telling that the man who propagated and popularized a theory of evolution was, at least by his own account, a victim of his own system. The system is, in fact, that death runs everything, blind chance and death. It's more a system of failure and occasional success than anything directed. Has Darwinism helped us? Not only socially, people point to movements in the 20th and 21st century that can be linked to Darwinism as a philosophy. What about science? What about its, what it claims to be as its proper home? Has Darwinism, evolutionary Darwinism, helped science? For the next half hour, we'll be talking with Dr. Michael Behe, professor of biochemistry at Lay University in Pennsylvania, senior fellow for the Discovery Institute's Center for Culture, Science and Culture, and he's author of the book Darwin's Black Box. You can join us as well, 1-877-623-6943, 1-877-623-MY-IE, and our in-studio email address on this Monday, the 9th of February, issuesetcstudio@gmail.com, issuesetcstudio@gmail.com. Dr. Behe, welcome back.
Thanks very much. It's great to be with you, Todd.
Has evolutionary Darwinism been good for the discipline of science?
It's certainly been mixed. If I had to say anything, I'd say it's been a net negative. It was an interesting idea that Darwin had, but since science seems to be stuck on trying to fit everything into Darwin's framework, inevitably you put things in there that shouldn't have been in there. One good recent example is that for a couple decades, people thought that much of the human genome and the genome of other organisms too, that the most of it was junk because they didn't understand what it was doing, and so they said, well, evolution, you expect waste and you expect things not to work and so on. So maybe 10% of our genes our genome works and the other 90% doesn't. And now we're just finding out that was misleading. That, in fact, the parts that we thought were junk turn out to be control regions, where the control regions tell the genes when to turn on and turn off, and how strongly to turn on, and all sorts of important things. And that's just one example.
You once believed in Darwinian evolution. Why did you change your mind?
Yes, I did. I believed in it because that's what I was taught in school and in grade school, high school, college, graduate school, and so on. And I had no reason to think that, you know, my teachers didn't know what they were saying. But when I was in the late 1980s, when I was an associate professor already at Lehigh University, I read a book called Evolution, a Theory in Crisis, by a man named Michael Denton, who's a geneticist, and he was working in Australia at the time. And he was also an agnostic. He had no particular philosophical reasons to doubt Darwinism or theological reasons. But nonetheless, he was tired of hearing Darwinists claim, you know, pretty much everything for their theory when he saw very, very large problems with it, problems that affected really fundamental issues. And I was really startled by reading that book because I had never heard any scientist say that there were problems with Darwin's theory. I thought there were none. And after I finished the book, I found that a large part of the way that I thought the world worked was based on not on really solid evidence, but on sociological factors, because that's what we were supposed to think. And that kind of made me mad. And so from then on, I began to pay very close attention to questions about evolution and eventually decided that Darwinism did not live up to its billing.
You spent a lot of time talking and writing about systems, especially at the biochemical level, that are, in your term, irreducibly complex. Would you explain that to us at the lowest level of the lay understanding, so we can understand exactly what irreducible complexity is and why it is so crucial in a critique of Darwinian evolution?
Sure. Irreducible complexity is a fancy phrase, but it stands for a very simple concept. It just means that you've got some machine or something that performs a function, but the machine needs a number of different parts all working together and with each other to perform the function. And if you take one or more of the parts away, then it doesn't work anymore. And one example I like from our everyday life, which I think gets across the concept, is a mechanical mousetrap. You know, a mousetrap that you get at a grocery store, a hardware store or something, generally has 5-6 parts. It's got a spring, a metal spring with extended ends, and one of the ends sticks across another piece called the hammer, which is the piece that strikes the mouse, and you got to kind of cock the hammer back, and there's another metal piece called the holding bar, which stabilizes it, and then you got to put the end of the holding bar into another piece called the catch to stabilize that until the mouse comes along. And if any of these things are missing, the mouse trap doesn't work. Now, the relevance of this to Darwinian evolution is that we have found things like the mouse trap in life, especially at the molecular and cellular level of life that was really completely unknown to Darwin. Darwin and his contemporaries thought that the cell was a simple little piece of jelly, kind of protoplasm, it was called. But now, in the past 100 years or so, we found that the cell is literally filled with machines made out of molecules, and machines that make the mousetrap look very, very simple. Now, Darwin's theory says you've got to improve an organism or a system by very gradual changes over long periods of time, step by very, very tiny step, because he knew if that you improve things too rapidly and in big leaps, it would look a whole lot like something other than a random change was taking place. It would look like it was a directed change. But if you have an irreducibly complex system like a mousetrap, it's extremely difficult to see how you could put something like that together step by tiny step. Rather, something like that points to a mechanism having been conceived of in advance and put together with a purpose in mind.
So, in other words, and this seems to be kind of not just a minor weakness in the theory, but perhaps an Achilles heel to the theory, it seems that Darwinian evolution, especially as it's taught at the popular level, depends upon people just kind of gestalting the changes between in organisms and not really sitting down to explain what was there before this was there and what did it do if it couldn't do what it does now without all the parts. Have I put it clearly enough?
Yeah, that's exactly right. People, notoriously, Darwinists have vivid imaginations. And, you know, imagining Dr. Jekyll morphing into Mr. Hyde was child's play compared to what folks who believe in Darwin's theory think they can do. But they never actually put numbers on these things. They never actually do experiments to show that these are realistic stories that they tell. And so students are learning that evolution happened by this means of random change and selection but they're not learning that it's pretty much an assumption. It's based on the assumption that that evolution had to happen by random changes because there's nothing to direct it, nothing beyond matter and energy which would be able to shape things.
We're talking with Dr. Michael Behe. He's professor of biochemistry at Lehigh University in Pennsylvania, senior fellow for the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. He's author of the book Darwin's Black Box. Of course, later this week, a lot of people will be celebrating the 200th anniversary of Darwin and the 150th anniversary of his landmark publication, The Origin of Species. We'll talk more about Darwinian evolution on the other side of this break. We have information, by the way, on the Discovery Institute and on Dr. Behe's book, Darwin's Black Box, at our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Click On Demand. Our in-studio email address, issuesetcstudio@gmail.com, issuesetcstudio@gmail.com, and our call-in number, 10 more minutes with Dr. Behe on the other side of the break, 1-877-623-6943, 1-877-623-MY-I-E. Tomorrow on the program, we'll talk to Dr. Lewis Brighton about eternal life. Well, when we come back, so, if I am to believe that from the incredibly simple, and not just simple, the random, the chaotic, there emerges, given enough time, enough energy and matter, and enough failures, systems that are full of information, the human genome. Just one example. Systems that are highly complex and organized, but to believe that they are self-organized. When I look around in the world, I find nothing that organizes itself blindly without some kind of a direction. Information doesn't seem to arise randomly out of non-information. It just doesn't seem to pass the smell test with me, this notion of Darwinian evolution. We'll talk more about all those issues on the other side of this break. Dr. Michael Behe is our guest. We're destined to be Darwin's children this time.
Here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Help inform your fellow parishioners about Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Click promote and copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. We update this paragraph weekly. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org.
What kind of physical and mental anguish did Jesus endure in the hours leading up to his death? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February is titled He Was Crucified. It's written by medical doctor Gerald Stanley. You can browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org, or you can purchase He Was Crucified by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Enrich your meditation on Christ's passion with He Was Crucified, 1-800-325-3040.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. But due to the heavy volume, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available 24/7, 618-223-8384.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology. And we'd like to send you the new Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, 1600 Gulfview Drive, Suite 230, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the new Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.
Dust in the wind. All we are is dust in the wind. All we are is dust.
Welcome back. We're talking about Darwinian evolution on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Michael Behe is our guest. He's professor of biochemistry at Lehigh University in Pennsylvania, senior fellow for the Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture, and author of the book Darwin's Black Box. Dr. Behe, the smell test just doesn't seem to pass it for me, especially with regard to the subject of information. That is, Darwin would have us believe that not just information, but highly complex information, almost staggeringly complex information, has simply happened rather than come from some other system of information. Am I onto something here in my suspicions about this?
Yeah, I certainly think you're exactly right. But, you know, we shouldn't blame poor Darwin himself for all of this, because you have to remember he wrote in the 19th century when nobody had heard of DNA and cells were thought to be little simple pieces of gelatinous material, and the molecular and cellular basis of life was unknown. Watson and Crick hadn't discovered DNA and the genetic code and all the sorts of rich information-bearing structures in the cell that we now know are there. But now that we have discovered them, you'd think it would call for a very strong reevaluation of Darwin's theory. But in some sort of inertia in the scientific community, that theory has just been applied, even though the basis of it is really has disappeared. And I think the real problem is that any other alternative, which would likely explain the data, is really unacceptable, because science doesn't want information to really come and be put into life, or at least many scientists don't. Scientists study nature's laws and matter and energy and so on, and they want everything to be able to fit into their discipline. So even the most stunningly complex and sophisticated machinery, such as is found in the cell, is shoehorned into this theory that explains, you know, with this very simple idea of there's a random change and that helps an organism and over time that builds up life. I'm with you. It does not smell very good at all.
We're told that if we were to permit even an alternative to be taught alongside Darwin's theory, or for Darwin's theory, such as it is among us today, to be critiqued in a serious way in the classroom, that we would have to give up teaching things like biology, because you can't teach biology unless you have Darwin's theory underpinning it. Is this true?
Well, no, that's just a scare tactic, in my humble opinion. It's like, telling somebody if you vote for, you know, a higher minimum wage, then, you know, the country will turn communist or some such thing. Biology advanced without regard to Darwin's theory. The discovery of DNA, the discovery of the genetic code, the discovery of little machines in the cell, little outboard motors that power cells around and so on, that was not predicted by Darwin's theory. It's not explained by Darwin's theory. At best, people try to kind of put all of this information, stuff it into the framework of Darwin's theory, but it certainly was no help. And if we changed our ideas of how such things came about, we would be much better off in biology than we are now.
How much of Darwin's original thought and theory has survived till today among those who still teach it?
Well, simply the idea that random changes can sometimes benefit people, and if that's the case, then natural selection means that the benefit will ensure that the offspring of this lucky mutant will do better than others of its species and therefore prosper and increase in the population. And actually that does happen, you know, on occasion, but it's only for very minor changes in pre-existing biological systems. For example, the development of antibiotic resistance by some bacteria, and even in humans, the development of mutations like sickle cell anemia mutation, they can be explained nicely by Darwin's theory. But it's like explaining that your car can be made to go faster and can be more aerodynamically shaped if you broke off the mirrors. If you break off the mirrors, that doesn't explain how your car got there in the first place. And if you change hemoglobin in people with sickle cell anemia so that it gunks up when a malarial parasite invades the red blood cell, that's interesting, but it doesn't tell you how hemoglobin got there in the first place. So Darwin's theory is important in a sense, and it does explain some things that are medically very important to us, but it does not explain how life can be built up in the first place.
Is there a chink in the armor that is kind of plated over science in the last 100 years or so? Is there, or 200 years, is there a kind of a light at the end of the tunnel for those who are saying there is an alternative to this and we're really not doing ourselves any favors by continually trying to hitch our wagon to this star?
Well, I think there is, and I'm actually very optimistic, at least in the long run, that biologists and scientists in general will realize that we've been barking up the wrong tree for a long time. And the reason is that the data simply are pointing more and more strongly away from randomness and more towards design or purpose in life. The elegant molecular machinery that I wrote about in Darwin's Black Box 12 years ago has not gotten any simpler. And in the meantime, you know, new systems of great complexity have been discovered that we didn't expect and that we can't explain at this point. So I think in the long run, the data will force people to look at things differently. In the short run, it seems to be a matter of politics and sociology, but not in the long run.
I'm sure that there'll be a lot of media coverage Thursday at the 200th anniversary of Charles Darwin's birthday. What do we need to be able to tell our neighbors, coworkers, family members about Darwin's theory of evolution with about a minute here?
Well, I think we should tell them that for a 19th century theory, Darwin came up with something very interesting and that his theory does explain some things. But as for the mystery of life and how life got here, he was unable to explain that, even though he wanted to. And that it looks like in biology, as well as in other scientific areas like physics and astronomy and so on, that to explain the nature of our universe and life, we have to go beyond the universe, that scientific results are pointing beyond nature for an explanation.
Dr. Michael Behe is professor of biochemistry at Lehigh University in Pennsylvania. He's senior fellow for the Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture, and he's author of the book Darwin's Black Box. Dr. Behe, thanks for being our guest.
Always my pleasure. Thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll discuss eternal life. Dr. Lewis Brighton will be our guest. There isn't enough time. There just isn't. There's not enough time for Darwin's theory to play itself out and do what he says it was able to do. There wasn't enough time, even when in those days they were thinking of a much younger universe. And then scientists seem to think that the universe is much older. Well, if it is, it's still not enough time. I heard a scientist talking the other day saying, no, but there's a loophole that saves it all. Because the universe itself is infinite in its expanse. And since it is, by definition, infinite, there must be, if not enough time, at least enough space for somewhere something to have happened that would lead to something looking like what Darwin has said. The problem is it happened here. And there are better explanations for the complexity, the intelligence, the design, the purpose that we find around us in the world every single day. And I'm optimistic, too, because honest scientific pursuit, looking closer and closer, smaller and smaller, larger and larger at the world of life around us, will with each ramping up of the scale or down of the scale find more and more the fingerprints of not only intelligence and not only design, but of a creator. And sooner or later, overwhelmed with the facts, overwhelmed with the data, the information that they find, I think sooner or later, honesty will actually prevail. And Darwin, perhaps useful for a time and in a limited scope, will take his place among the other theorists who've had bright ideas, interesting ideas, but ultimately ideas that failed to explain what they claimed to explain. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.